Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Of course, today we got the Nitrous Streetcar Brawl happening today and going through the night. And also the Supercars shootout tomorrow at the legendary Great Lakes Dragway. And I'd also like to thank our friends at David Hobbs Honda. Make sure to check out DavidHobbs.com for all the latest deals in new and certified Honda used vehicles at DavidHobbs.com. Also joining me, of course, is the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski. How are you doing today, sir?
If I was doing any better, Steve, it would be illegal. I'll tell you that.
And of course, breaking news on the fan is brought to you by Pennzoil. Motor oil is made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil, and we have breaking NASCAR news, of course, and that's Austin Dillon testing positive for COVID-19. This morning, Richard Childress Racing's NASCAR Cup Series driver, Austin Dillon, tested positive for COVID-19 in accordance with NASCAR safety protocol. Dillon is self-quarantining away from RCR facilities and will not be competing in this weekend's NASCAR Cup Series race on the road course at Daytona. Austin's wife, Whitney, and son, Ace, remain healthy and symptom-free. And Jeff's favorite driver, Kaz Grala, will be driving the number 3 Chevrolet for RCR this weekend. Reaction from Jeff Orlowski, please.
Well, you can't tell me that nothing good has come out of this pandemic here. So, Corona, they set their sights and they got somebody good. Now, all kidding aside, obviously, we hope that him and his family are healthy and all that kind of stuff. My immediately what comes to my mind is Jimmy Johnson. And, he tested positive and then basically directly after had two negative tests. He missed one race and he was fine. So if it was a false positive, then that's what it was. If it was a, he's just got an immune system like, a super animal, and was able to fight it off and beat it in the span of 2 or 3 days, then good for him. So, you hope it's not a false positive, but, America wins with Austin Dillon not racing. And, the sponsors of NASCAR win because Kaz Grala is going to cause a caution or two.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be a wild race, and we'll talk about that in a second here. I did want to touch base on Michigan. The twin races at Michigan dominated by Kevin Harvick, and a really interesting stat from our friends at NASCAR Hub. I thought there was a pretty cool stat. This title season versus this season, and of course, 2014 won the championship. He had 36 starts, 5 wins, and 14 top fives and 20 top tens. This year, 22 starts, so I guess 2/3 of the starts. He has 6 wins, 15 top fives and 20 top tens. Average finish between the two is basically a 13th place in 2014 and sixth place, average 5.9 this year. And Kevin Harvick is running roughshod over the field, isn't he?
Yeah, it was the total Kevin Harvick show last weekend. You know, he won from, I can't remember if he was on the pole or if he was just on the front row in the first race. He wins that one, and then that means that the next day he starts 20th, and what a shocker, he wins that as well. Yes, there was a decent battle at the end. Denny Hamlin's car was on rails at the end. It was probably a little bit faster than the four when the checker flag flew, but Kevin Harvick gets the win again. So it kind of brings into question, if for some reason something happens and Kevin Harvick does not win the title this year, it calls into question the legitimacy of of the playoffs. And, you know, him and Denny Hamlin are both dominating the entire series for the span of the entire season so far. So if neither one of those guys is raising the trophy at the end, you know, it's going to be hard to kind of wrap your mind around that and think that you got a legitimate champion for the 2020 season. But with the two wins that Kevin Harvick had last weekend, he pretty much all but locked up the regular season title, which will give him a bunch more playoff points when he enters it. So basically, he could probably spend a month in the Caribbean, doesn't even have to run any of the races, and he'll still walk, you know, right into the championship race at Phoenix. So, you know, good for him. You know, it's one of those situations. I know I got tired of watching Jimmy Johnson win title after title after title after title, but it didn't seem like Jimmy Johnson was winning, you know, every single week. It was still fairly competitive, sure, and stuff like that. So obviously, if you're a fan of Harvick or Hamlin, you're having a ball this year. If you're a fan of Kyle Busch or any of the other NASCAR drivers, it's kind of hard to get too excited about race weekend, knowing that chances are you're going to be trailing the 4 and the 11.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you look at the three top auto racing series, it's been domination so far in all three. You look at Formula One with Lewis Hamilton and what Mercedes is doing, and then with IndyCar with Scott Dixon and Chip Ganassi Racing, and then the aforementioned Kevin Harvick and Stewart Haas Racing. You got a perfect storm of experienced drivers who are basically probably at their pinnacle of that, you know, that fine line between experience, age, knowledge, how to set up everything is they're at that sweet spot, all of them at that age. For IndyCar and NASCAR, they're roughly about 40 years old, 38, 39, 40, 41 years old is when it really is that sweet zone for drivers to really excel, especially with these two, with Dixon and Harvick. And then with Lewis Hamilton for Formula One, a little bit younger, of course, but Mercedes is such a juggernaut with their experience and with the engineering behind them. They're just running over the competition in all three series at this point.
Yeah, you know, this is not going to be the, in a year that has been filled with drama from the virus and from, you know, everything else, that's the protests and civil unrest and all that kind of stuff that's going on. Auto racing is not really, at least the top three series, like you said, isn't really providing that much drama to add to this year. So whether that's a good thing or, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to not have too much drama, but it takes away some of the excitement. You know, there was when Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart and Carl Edwards and Matt Kenseth and insert veteran driver here all retired, and it was the quote unquote youth movement is coming in NASCAR, and all these super talented up and coming drivers and blah blah blah. It's proven where right now, at least, the veterans are stealing the show and dominating everything. So you know, like I said, it takes a little bit of the excitement away because of how dominant a couple of the cars have been. But, you know, and we said it a few weeks ago after Scott Dixon won, you know, yet another race that, you know, basically the championship is all wrapped up in IndyCar, and they didn't even run, you know, they haven't run the Indy 500 yet. But, you know, it takes some of the drama away, but, you know, you have to appreciate the dominance. You have to appreciate the talent that we're seeing. And, you know, we're lucky to be able to witness something like this, I think.
Yeah, and also revisiting Michigan, we all say on the show, you know, the racing should look difficult. We should see the cars out of shape, and you know, we should see the drivers cranking on the wheel, this, that, and the other thing. And we saw a little bit of that. I thought this was kind of an interesting situation where with Brad Keselowski and Ryan Newman, and once again, Fox Sports 1 had a neat graphic when they showed on that lap, I think it was lap 96, you know, Keselowski gets his run down the front straightaway and was 5 miles an hour faster than Blaney entering turn one, gets the run, and he's like, yee-haw, here we go. It loses control. Unfortunately, it took him and his teammate out, Blaney. But what's interesting, when I grabbed a freeze frame of when that happened, if you look who's behind him, and then you kind of make sense, it's Harvick and Hamlin. So, right. You know, here's Keselowski, who's been battling. You know, he's got some wins this year, and he's looked good, but he's like, you know, he knows these are two guys to beat. So he finally gets this run down the front straightaway. He is flying. He's thinking, all right, here we go. I'm going to take this thing right into the league. And, yeah, unfortunately for Keselowski and his teammate Blaney and Team Penske, it didn't work out that way, did it?
No, it didn't. And, you know, obviously it's not often that you see accidents happen, A, between teammates, and B, between teammates running for the lead. And, you know, it goes to show you that, you know, when you have Hamlin and when you have Harvick hot on your heels and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, the pressure is amped up. And, you know, you're more likely to make a mistake. And it was, you know, I give Brad Keselowski a ton of credit that he sat there and, you know, he took the blame right away. He hopped out of the car.
Right.
I got into the corner way too hot. I didn't realize what kind of run I had on him. And I'm very sorry that I took out my teammate and wrecked, you know, his car. And then he apologized to the team as a whole. However, it is funny that, you know, this again comes only a couple weeks after Brad Keselowski was talking about how he would like to see NASCAR drivers be able to get demoted in series, depending on wrecks that they cause and problems that they cause on the track. So, you know, I kind of got a kick out of that as well.
It certainly was. And, for those wondering about today's or tomorrow's race, the Gold Bowl only 235. It is Kevin Harvick will be on the pole with Hamlin second, followed by Truex, Busch, Logano, Almirola, Chase Elliott, and then Kurt Busch, the 21 car, Matt DiBenedetto, and then now they have Dillon listed there, and I'm wondering if I assuming if it's Grala, he has to start from the rear. So that'll be interesting to see how that develops. And how about that, Jeff, with NASCAR mixing up that starting lineup?
Yeah, you know, it again, they mix it up right after Kyle Busch drops from 12th to 13th in points. So he wouldn't have had a top 12 position locked in like they did under the original bingo system that they had, random draw, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it seems more fair this way and everything like that. I like the other way better. We talked about this before. I would just put every driver's name in a hat and pick the starting lineup that way if you're not going to do traditional qualifying, but this way is more fair. But again, you're seeing the cars that dominate the season are going to start in the front all the time. So it, you know, Kevin Harvick doesn't have too, and Denny Hamlin don't have too far to go to take the checkered flag. They don't have to. Harvick just doesn't have to lose a position, and Hamlin has to go plus one by the end of the race. So it takes a little bit of the excitement out for me, I think.
Yeah, and I thought this was interesting, too. The Bet Online, which is, I guess, a partner with NASCAR or whatever, with listed Chase Elliott with the favorite this weekend to win the Go Bowling 235 at the road course. Do you like that bet, or are you looking for somebody, or are you looking for higher odds at this point?
I'd be looking for higher odds. I think Chase Elliott's a good pick. You know, he's one of the only Chevys that have consistently shown a ton of speed. So he's got that going for him. His car has been running phenomenal, and obviously the kid has a world of talent. But if you're going to give me Harvick, Hamlin, and Chase Elliott, I'll still take the field. You know, we talk about it a bunch, you know, that this is a toss-up race. They're running the 24-hour of Daytona track, and most of these drivers have never done it, except, you know, they all were, I'm sure, locked in their video game rooms and running the simulators all week and everything like that, which is great. And I'm sure it helps, but, you know, it doesn't equate to on-track experience. So, you know, there's going to be a learning curve, I think. But I think the learning curve will go away after the first 5 to 10 laps. These guys are good enough where, after 5 or 10 laps, if you don't have your line and where to brake and all that kind of stuff figured out, you're going to be in for a real long day anyway.
You certainly will. Last night, of course, they had the ARCA Menards Series running on the road course, and they ran part of it, or actually, I should say, most of it in the wet and then under drying conditions by the last third of the race. I thought it was a very entertaining race in which the drivers showed self-control, and I think if the Cup Series and the Xfinity Series does the same thing and not drive like idiots and have yellow after yellow after yellow and then red flag after red flag, I think it can be a very good show. Michael Self won. Ty Gibbs is actually probably the fastest car, but his tires kind of went away, and I thought it was an excellent tire management by Michael Self and Venturini Motorsports by kind of more pacing themselves and let Ty Gibbs race them for the lead and then kind of burn out his tires, and then Self was pretty easily able to pass him at the end and actually had a 5-6 second lead at the end. Colin Brown finished third, filling in for Sam Mayer, hopefully soon to be a friend of the show here. We're working on getting him on when the schedule permits. He of course got hurt a little bit in that Trans Am race at Road America a couple weeks ago, and is nursing a broken thumb. So he drove the first half of the race, and then Braun came in for the second half. I thought he'd be a little more competitive, and then I wonder if it was just a situation where, well, they didn't want to really get into a real pissy fit with Self and Gibbs, and they were running for points too. So Taylor Gray, they had 2 17 cars because they had a West Coast driver, Will Rogers, and Taylor Gray actually both in 17's car, which really just bugs the hell out of me, because you only have 2022 cars starting and you have double the numbers. I mean, it's 2020. You can't put go get a decal and take care of that, or make it 7. You know, it just really irritates me when they do that crap. Same thing with midget racing, but I don't want to get on that rant right now. They filled out their top five, and everybody's favorite, Haley Deegan was sixth, so I thought it was a very entertaining race, though, even though with ARCA, with their challenge with the car counts and that. But like I said, everybody races instead of wrecking. I think we should have some very, very good and entertaining races coming up this weekend at Daytona, Jeff.
Yeah, and I do too, but what do you think the odds are of that? We've seen the Xfinity Series, Jesus, at Road America, the last 10 laps took, you know, 90 minutes, and it got to the point where it was just utterly painful to watch the end of that race. And, you know, it was a phenomenal race when they were actually under green flag conditions. There was tons of action. It was phenomenal. And, you know, I was very entertained watching it. But the last 10 laps took an hour and a half, and that is completely ridiculous. And with all the pressure that's on the line for the guys in the Cup Series, Xfinity not as much because, you know, let's be honest, they no one pays attention to the Xfinity Series for the most part. But, you know, the pressure is so big on these guys to get a win, get into the playoffs. If one of these drivers who's outside of the top 16, you know, actually wins this race tomorrow in the Cup Series, that can shake up the points like crazy. So while the ARCA Series race last night was great, and I agree, they ran smart. They weren't sitting there overdriving and making stupid moves and, you know, just doing dumb things to try to, you know, save or gain a tenth or two-tenths of a second on that lap. There is no way that I expect the same thing to be said in the Cup Series tomorrow. And we've seen it week after week in the Xfinity Series where I don't think it's going to happen there either.
Yep. We have an abbreviated show today, of course, with the Brewery game. The time changed to 2:20 today because of weather. And, of course, you know, that's very important with Major League Baseball, the schedule that they're running now. They really don't want to postpone any games. So they moved the game up. And, of course, that moves up the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin On Deck show with Tim Allen. That'll be starting at the top of the hour at 1 o'clock. So we're going to go to 1 o'clock. When we come back, we're going to talk some Indy 500 qualifying, which is happening today. And then we'll also talk to Pete Lyons, author of the new book, Shadow. So those who may remember the old Shadow cars, his book, Shadow, The Magnificent Machines, and A Man of Mystery. Of course, the Shadow Racing Team participated in Can-Am Formula and Formula 5000 racing in the 60s and or primarily in the 70s. So looking forward to talking to Pete. And then we have Fast Eddie Lapine reporting from Florida. We'll get the latest on what's going on in Florida and Daytona and elsewhere. So full show today, but only going to 1 o'clock. So we'll have more on the Final Inspection Show right after this.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi. Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and our friends at David Hobbs Honda. And we have Indy 500 qualifying today at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Sans fans, Jeff, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm excited for the Indy 500. And obviously, if you want to hear my thoughts on the no fans for the race, go back to last week's show and check that out with Fan On Demand, radio.com app, all that. And you can hear that. But, there's been some surprises up front, Steve. And, why don't you tell everybody who's fast so far?
Indy 500 qualifying is prefaced with four-lap qualifying. And one of the stats I thought was very helpful from our friends at NBC Sports Network is they had the best four-lap averages for Indy 500 practice this week. And it's been Honda. Honda's been a little bit quicker than the Chevy so far. And it's been Andretti Autosport that's been pretty quick with the fastest overall lap by Marco Andretti so far this month. But the fastest for the four-lap average has been Ryan Hunter-Reay, second Marcus Ericsson, and then Graham Rahal was third quick. And then Scott Dixon, who we said in the previous segment, dominating so far this year. In IndyCar season, he's been fourth. Hinchcliffe, who's running part-time this year, is fifth quickest. And then the first Chevy with Will Power, of course, Jeff's favorite IndyCar driver. He is sixth so far and the quickest of the Penske's. And then we have Takuma Sato, teammate of Graham Rahal, and then the aforementioned Marco Andretti. All these cars are over 230. Colton Herta, who's not had the best luck at Indianapolis so far in his very young career, at ninth. And then Rinus VK, the quickest rookie at 10th. So it'll be interesting to see. Practice and qualifying is totally different. Look for Team Penske. The Oz Rise Up, they always do, as well as Chip Ganassi Racing. But it would be nice to see Andretti Autosport at least get a one or two on the front row at Indianapolis, because they've been struggling a bit this year. And I know this is one that they always circle on the calendar, Jeff.
Yeah, it'd be a huge boost for that team. It is exciting, and I get a kick out of it that as of now, and like you said, the four lap and actual qualifying and everything is a lot different. But at least for now, to see that Penske is having problems keeping up with the speed of the Hondas, and it adds more intrigue, and it adds another layer of drama and storylines for the biggest race of the year. So I think it's fantastic, I tip my hat to Rinus VK, man. What a phenomenal start to the season he's having already. And he's holding his own, like you said, 10th quick with the four lap average and all that. So that's good to see and good for him.
Yeah, and then only one incident so far this year, or I guess you could say a major incident this year, and that was two-time Formula One world champion Fernando Alonso, of course, who had coming through turn four, got on that little, I guess you could call it a curve, cement curbing, just on the inside of the rumble strips, hit that, and the car pushed out towards the outside wall, hit the wall at the pretty much the apex, or just at the exit at turn four, I guess you could say, and then spun and just missed the attenuator at the pit wall entrance, and then hit the inside wall, slid all the way down pit road about five stalls away from the first team that was lined up on pit road, so I'm sure it caught their attention. Alonso was unhurt, but other than that, a few guys are pushing it. Of course, our friend Santino Ferrucci, who's been on the show, he had a wild moment, as well as a couple others who got pretty close. As they say, you couldn't even get a piece of paper between the tire and the walls, as they've said in the past. So guys are pushing it, and it'll be interesting to see what qualifying today, what unfurls. And then, of course, next week is the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, I can't wait. And, it's been a tradition my entire life. One of the, earliest racing memories I have is every single year sitting down and watching the Indy 500 with my dad. And my dad is not what you would consider he was never a quote-unquote, huge racing fan. He did take me to Santa Fe Speedway outside of Chicago all the time when I was a kid to watch the demolition derbies and late models and stock, all that kind of stuff. But, NASCAR was not typically on the TV on the weekends. He was more of a golf and baseball guy. But Indy 500 was always a tradition, and one that I pass on. I could care less. I wish my kids wanted to watch every NASCAR race with me every weekend and IndyCar and all that. They do not. But every year, their butts are parked right next to mine in front of the TV to watch Indianapolis and to watch Daytona 500. So, there's family traditions that you have to keep up. And when they're racing related, I like them even more.
Yeah, Marco Andretti's lap yesterday of 233.491 was the fastest in practice at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway since 1996. And those may remember that was the first year of the IRL and car breakup, but they were using basically champ car or kart cars at that point, which was a lot of Lolas and Reynards and whatnot, very fast cars, of course. Ari Leyendyk with the quickest lap, quickest four lap average too, and quickest lap that year. So and that was the first lap or quickest since Ari Leyendyk's quickest lap, 239.260 on May 10th in 1996. So The cars are getting quick. I'm sure that aero screen is helping them a little bit, cut through the wind a little bit quicker. It'll be interesting to see what happens, who gets on the pole today at Indianapolis. And we'll talk more about that in the final segment today with Eddie Lapine. We'll get predictions for the pole, and then we'll also do predictions for Daytona for the Xfinity race and the Cup race tomorrow. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Pete Lyons and talk about his exciting new book on the Shadow Racing Team and the man behind the myth coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, along with our friends at David Hobbs Honda. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Pete Lyons, whose new book, I mean, it's a pretty cool book. I saw it up at Road America a couple weeks ago. It's the book of Shadow Racing, The Magnificent Machines of a Man of Mystery, dealing with Can-Am Formula and Formula 5000. Pete, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Steve. Great to talk with you. Thanks.
Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And, you know, from somebody like me who was a kid in the 70s, you know, for me, AFX cars, an era which there weren't too many black cars. And black cars, of course, when you're a kid, is cool. And we all had the AFX cars and whatnot, used them on our slot car tracks. But Shadow was certainly an interesting, thought-provoking team in that. But maybe tell the listeners a bit about the Don Nichols, who is the man behind the team.
Well, there's a lot of people who would probably say black was an appropriate color for Don Nichols because he's deliberately kept himself a rather shadowy figure. There was first of all, he was an innately reserved fellow, I came to understand as I got to know him. He liked to use the rumor, and that's all he said it was a rumor, that he had been a CIA spy back in his times with the U.S. Army when he was an Army counterintelligence officer stationed in Japan during the Cold War. And he would say that much to you, but then somebody would say, well, what did you do? What things did you accomplish? Well, I don't think it's appropriate to talk about that. And so he would just leave that hanging. You'd think, ooh, a spy. And so I'm not saying it didn't happen, but he never actually confirmed it to us. So naturally, when there's an absence of fact, rumors rush in so that everybody says he was a spy.
And tell us a bit about the book. How did it come about? And give the listeners a little bit of your background too, which is interesting in itself.
Well, thank you. Yes, I've happily misspent my youth as a racing journalist. I sort of basically ran away and joined the circus when I was a kid, or young guy, and I've never left. I've had an absolutely wonderful time following Formula One and Can-Am and some IndyCar racing and even a little NASCAR around the world. I've been a magazine editor. I've done race reports for Autosport, Auto Week, a whole bunch of other magazines, and I've done Shadow is actually my 18th book on the start, surprised to say, and it's probably the biggest one, and I'm delighted to do it. It was just a joy to do it.
Well, Pete, Jeff Orlowski here. Congratulations, 18 books. That's one hell of an achievement, and it's only 18 more than I've ever written, so you don't have any competition coming from this side anytime soon. What is your... your favorite personal memory of the Shadow team and, you know, the fun drivers and everything that they had over there?
Whoa, how much time have we got, Steve? remember, they were actually active in racing for about 12 years, and they were in Formula One, in Can-Am, and in Formula 5000. And there were probably close to 30, certainly over 30 professional drivers who ran the cars. And there were, Don Nichols used to claim he made more than 100 of these cars. And so, and there were at least 14 specific types of them. So you're asking me for my favorite. Gosh, I'm going to have to just jump in and say that the tiny tire car, the very first one, was the most eye-catching one. It was this roller skate on wheels that they used to, I'm sorry, this go-kart on steroids is what they used to call it. You know, it was a doorstop, a Chevy engine stuck in the back of it. And it debuted in 1970 and only ran three races. It didn't do at all well, but what it did was catch everyone's attention. And if it had been a conventional car, if Don Nichols had been a conventional person and just done a conventional car and had that kind of a record, it would have sunk without a trace. We'd not even remember the name anymore. But because that car was so electrifyingly eye-catching, we have never forgotten the name Shadow. And it all goes back to that image created, I think, in 1969, 1970.
How did the name come about?
Ah, there are stories there, too. There are people who will tell you, well, it's because of his mysterious background as a spy. He also himself used to say that he used to love listening to the Shadow radio program, which was the one where this guy goes, what evil lurks in the hearts of men, the Shadow knows. And people thought that was probably the main reason for the name, and he used to say it was part of it. But he and the guy who designed the first car, Trevor Harris, I spoke with both of them at great length about all this. And they seemed to agree that the actual genuine reason for it was because they wanted to build a very, very low-profile car to reduce the frontal area so the car could go faster along the straight. And that was the whole key to the car, that it was much lower than a regular car. And during a bench racing session one day, the two of them were sitting around saying, well, what's the lowest machine we could make it? How tall would it be? And they said, well, you know, actually, there's only one two-dimensional object in the universe, and that is a shadow. And the shadow is that the car cast is actually okay. The only two-dimensional thing you can have. And so, okay, that's a good name. We'll call it the Shadow.
Interesting, good stuff. We're talking to Don Lyons and the Great Midwest Bank, or I'm sorry, Pete Lyons on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline about his book, Shadow, the Magnificent Machines of a Man of Mystery. And I guess the most important question, Pete, is how can we get the book?
I would love it if people would come to me and get a personal signed autographed copy from me, which they can do at my website, which is simply PeteLyons.com. That's all one word, lowercase, and don't forget the S there, PeteLyons.com. But, of course, there are other places that retail it, it's published in England. And it's printed in Europe, so it's fairly expensive. It's a big book. It's about $100. But honestly, I think it's worth it. It's much thicker than the book they asked me to write. I suffer from an inability to stop writing, I'm afraid. And it has 600-plus photos in it, and every single model of Shadow is lavishly illustrated, talked about, and all of the people are interviewed. I interviewed as many as people as I could get, you know, dozens of drivers, dozens of crew members, Don himself, all the designers. Penny Nichols, Don's daughter, who lives in Florida, she was with the team back in the 70s, and so I found her again, and we spent a lot of time. She was helping us greatly with insights to her life with her dad. So honestly, I think it's a good value for as expensive as it is.
Well, if you got problems stopping writing, I hope you didn't write your own vows for your wedding, or it might still be going on now.
Well,
luckily,
Pete, certainly...
I was so tongue-tied that glorious day that I don't know that I said anything.
Hey, we certainly take you. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule being on the show today. Make sure you check out Pete Lyons. It's Pete and then Lyons .com for the. It's a fantastic book. I saw it up at Road America a few weeks ago when George Fulmer and those guys were up there. Had a wonderful time up there, and it is worth the book. I mean, it's spectacularly turned out. The photos are awesome, and I really recommend it.
Thank you.
We will have it on our Facebook page, too, and we'll also tweet it out on our Twitter account on how to get the book. And, Pete, we certainly appreciate you taking time out.
Dave, it's been a delight talking with you. Thank you very much.
All right. That was Pete Lyons on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give it the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
Coming up next. Coming up next, we'll talk with Eddie Lapine from RacingNation.com next on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, an abbreviated Final Inspection Show. We're running to the top of the hour here because we're going to have the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin On Deck Show with Tim Allen coming up at the top of the hour. And Mitch, who's leading off for the Brewers today?
Omar Narvaez was the selection today by Brewers manager Craig Counsell, so he won the leadoff bingo today.
Very nice. Steve, does this mean that we get to... do the second hour of our show during the post-game show?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, a little Final Inspection Brewers post-game show combo. That would be phenomenal. Tim Allen's a NASCAR fan.
So we'll talk to Tim Allen. Will be joining the airwaves at the top of the hour and joining us right now on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from RacingNation.com. It is Eddie Lapine. How are you doing today, sir?
Hey, guys. How are you today? Busy weekend in racing.
It certainly is. And I just real quick here, you know, with Daytona Road Course, we got NASCAR there. You're down in Florida. I mean, have you gotten any feedback from the fans? Is there any type of buzz? Any you know, kind of man on the street things talking about that at all?
Well, I think it's a big deal. I mean, I think it's more in the circles of racing, it's a big deal. I mean, the people that are regular fans, but I think going to Daytona for an inaugural road course race, I think it's really going to be a very exciting race. And this weekend, with all three series being there this weekend too, ARCA was there yesterday, and today is the Infinity. It should be very exciting. I definitely... You know, with the ringers being there and nobody getting any practice, I think we're going to be in for a big show today and tomorrow.
Yeah, tell the fans a certain Porsche driver is going to be running an Xfinity Series. Give us a little one-minute background on him.
Well, Earl Bamber, Porsche factory driver, who is driving lately in the IMSA. He raced at Road America a few weeks ago. Had a little off-road excursion, but he is a Le Mans winner for Porsche, and he's going to be running for Richard Childress, which he was very excited. I talked to him the other day, and very excited. He said it's just been a dream to race in NASCAR series, and what better way to get your feet wet is driving for Richard Childress, one of the biggest names in NASCAR. So he'll be starting 20th today. He'll be rolling off the grid and driving the 21 car, and it should be very exciting. I mean, the guy's a hell of a driver, and to see him go to Daytona, which he has a lot of experience on the road course there, so we'll see if he can adapt fast in the car.
Eddie, with NASCAR running the 24 hours at Daytona course, and a track that none of the, you know, very few of the regular NASCAR drivers have driven, do you think that that helps even out the playing field with the young guys and the veterans, or do you think that just because of sheer experience that the veterans still have quite the advantage with no practice and no qualifying?
I think people that have driven the cars a lot more are going to have an advantage, but then you're going to have ringers. You know, AJ Allmendinger is running today, and I think he's starting right around with Earl, and guys like that can adapt and that have experience on that course. Recently me driving there on the road course, but they have a little added adventure. They have a chicane coming off NASCAR 4, which I've heard it's about a 45-mile-an-hour chicane, and they're going to have to come off the banking, and it's going to be very exciting. I mean, those cars are just not made to brake as good as a sports car, a 3,500-pound car, and it's really going to be exciting. I mean, they keep saying it's going to be a crash fest. You just don't know. I mean, the drivers have really been behaving themselves a lot better than I thought they would this year with the limited amount of racing, and it's made the racing good. So I think we're going to be in for a really good, exciting weekend at Daytona, and the weather hopefully won't be a factor. You just never know what might blow in at Daytona, but looking forward to, you know, this weekend.
Let's do predictions for the Cup race down at Daytona. And who do you like, Eddie, in the Cup race?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, I think, I don't know, Kyle Busch. I mean, he's had this season this year, and he recently ran the 24-hour race this year with Lexus at Daytona. And I just think he hasn't had that Kyle Busch kind of weekend, so I mean year this year, right. And I think this could be a breakout for him.
Jeff, what do you think?
I'm gonna go with good old Matt DiBenedetto. I think that him and Eric Amarola on a week-in, week-out basis have had cars that could get to victory lane. Neither one of them have made victory lane yet. I think one of them are due. I'm gonna go with the burrito.
All right, real quickly, then let's go Indy 500 poll. Who do you got, Eddie?
I don't know. Dixon's looking mighty good.
Yeah, what about you?
I want to go with him.
I'm feeling the power. Give me my boy Will.
Okay, I'm going to give you a bonus. I'm going to give you my front row. I'm going to go with Marco Andretti, Scott Dixon, and Will Power. So I think we're all on the same wavelength there. We got the Brewers on deck show coming up. The Pella Windle Indoors of Wisconsin on deck show with Tim Allen coming up next. You've been listening to the Final Inspection Show brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, along with our friends at David Hobbs Honda, coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.